We made this.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey!
Hello and welcome to Shipwrecked and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf, here on the We Made This Podcast Network. My name's Mark Adams, and I am your host for this episode. And with me at this time is Carl Bryan. Hello, Carl.
A yo-ho-ho to you, Mark.
Well, if that's not a portent, I don't know what is. We're also joined by Matt Latham. Hello, Matt.
Arr, how you be, arties?
That was also portentous.
It's another one from the big book of Matt voices.
Oh, no, no, please, no. No.
Arr, I'll be Roger. No, it's all right.
Please don't.
I've locked the front door this time.
Don't forget, everybody, that the episode on the Matt Latham How to Do a Character voice is going to be coming out by the end of January.
Please don't. I've not got over hobbleness. I've not.
He's finding your lack of faith in him quite disheartening. Your self-esteem's taking a real beating, particularly after
right,
that.
I'm so sorry, Hob. Anyway, we're doing Captain Butler because we're gluttons for punishment and we've been watching some right tat recently.
Oh, dear, yeah. 1997, potentially the worst year for Red Dwarf actors' other stuff.
Yeah, that's another thing we're going to cover at some point, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it'll be you two fuckers that will come on because you two are the worst gluttons for punishment.
It seems to be the case, yeah. There's been a few things, because this was me going, yeah, I had a Captain Butler, and everyone looking at me going like, what? And then that was when it sank in. I was like, oh, that means I'm going to be on this episode, doesn't it?
Hang on. I really hope that's not a quick jab at Crime Traveller.
Crime Traveller's good. It's actually good.
It was the new Doctor Who.
I'm looking forward to covering Crime Traveller.
I am as well.
The plan with Crime Traveller is to actually do it episodically rather than just cover it on one thing like we've done with Captain Butler and probably will do with Prince Among Men.
Well, my friend was, before we started recording, a friend of mine was here at my house just post-Christmas saying hello, and he works in telly, and he's done work for Doctor Who, and he's our mutual friend has done work on Dwarf, and I showed him our spreadsheet of what we've got coming up. He was like, are you doing Captain Butler? Are you doing Prince Among Men? You know, Maid Marian and that. And then he looked and went, oh, what's this series? I don't remember this one. I went, oh, no, that's Crime Traveller. And he looked at me and went, you're doing it episode by episode? Like, oh, yes. Yes, we are.
That's the exclusive news first. You've heard it here first.
He was surprised that there were 7 series of the British Empire. He thought there was only 3.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we've done 2 episodes on the 2 series of the British Empire. I'm going to probably refer back to the British Empire during this episode because of reasons and comparisons and stuff. But yeah, so it's not the last time you're going to hear about the British Empire in this episode, because I want to bring it up a couple of times.
I rewatched the British Empire to listen into your episodes that you recorded with Tony on it, and I thought that was bad, but holy fuck, Captain Butler. should we just get into it?
Yeah.
Because I regret suggesting this.
I take umbrage with the British Empire being bad as well. I don't think it is, but that's a whole other kettle of fish.
But the British Empire is okay. And it's certainly good compared to this shite.
I think, yeah, I might as well get the comparisons now, because I think of this. I've got the feeling that Captain Butler was probably made because they tried to give Craig. I don't know if it was made for Craig Charles. I'm not sure about the production side of it, but I think it's kind of like, I'm hesitant to say vehicle because I don't think it is. Whereas I think the British Empire was a vehicle for Chris Barry, and the main comparison I was going to get is that as much as I quite like Craig Charles, in terms of being able to portray character, he's not as malleable as Chris Barry is. Now, no. if you had Gordon Britus stood next to Arnold Rimmer, someone could easily be fooled in that they're two different people, or it's not the same actor playing two different people because of how they are physically, how they stand, how they are and stuff. Captain Butler, the character, I think there's a lot of Craig Charles in Dave Lister. There's an ease in which Craig Charles can easily slip into Dave Lister, because I think there's a lot of crossover between Craig Charles and Dave Lister. Perhaps the hygiene aspect might be slightly different.
Sure.
And with Captain Butler, I think it's just like watching Dave Lister just doing weird stuff. You can't get bought into, you can't buy it as another character, or it's... I feel bad criticizing Craig Charles, because I said I really like Craig Charles, but there's just something about it that doesn't seem to jump out, or there's no spark in the character there.
I mean, I was thinking about this when I was watching it. It's Craig Charles plays a character who's stuck on a ship with a ragtag bunch of misfits, and you get the feeling that in the producer's mind that should work because it did before. But yeah. One of the things, like Matt's just said, is the writing was on point, and there was using the... Basically, it was like taking Craig Charles and mixing him in with Lister to make it a more believable character. This seems to be like, hey, Craig, here's your lines. They're writing in what they think Craig Charles might do or say, rather than it being him playing a character. It's like they're almost writing it to play to being Craig Charles.
Even a prince among men. Gary Prince, who's played by Chris Barry, he's physically and his presence is so different from Arnold Rimmer, from Gordon Britus. And there's loads of stuff wrong with A Prince Among Men. But one of the things is that Chris Barry's commitment or his ability to kind of shapeshift and the physicality that he has with characters is there. So he physically feels like he's another person.
In Prince Among Men, you could buy from the way he handles himself, yes, this is a former footballer.
Yeah.
Whereas you could look at Britus or Rimmer and go, yeah, they've never played football a day in their lives, or something like that. He does manage to capture it. The reason the Britus Empire, I've never gone back to it, is I feel the voice hasn't aged well, and it goes through me like nails on chalkboard now. For Britus, if he didn't have that voice in Britus, or if it was less than I remember, I probably could watch it again. But I watched an episode of Prince Among Men this morning, just because it was on the list. And one, I was almost like, I really wish Mark was on this episode, because it's a weird hybrid of Scouse and Brummy.
It's supposed to be Geordie, isn't he?
And that's the thing. My mate was sat next to me and was like, is it Brummy? Is it Scouse? We're both kind of like, with the curly hair and everything, we're like, I think it's Scouse. But, yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
So I want to talk about when Captain Butler was made. It was launched on the 3rd of January, 1997. I was 18 years old at this point. And it was on Channel 4. And for me, I think it's incredibly embarrassing that this sitcom was released 10 years after series one of Red Dwarf and looks significantly more shit.
Yes. I mean, it's blatantly obvious from the off that they've got the ship set and they want to use it as much as possible. But you can also see the quote-unquote sky behind them has got material creases in it. And it's blatantly a sheet.
It felt to me that set, because they used it so, so much. It was almost like theatre.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In my head, it was like I'm watching a recording of a theatre, because there was so little when it came to outside of the set. Certainly in the first three or four episodes, at least. They did kind of branch out a little bit when they went on an island and when they went elsewhere. But yeah. It just feels like in the same year that Red Dwarf 7 was made, which, you know, wasn't quite as funny as Red Dwarf 6, but the production values were great.
Mm.
The production values of this were just embarrassingly bad.
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of Channel 4 was. It wasn't the start of like the downward turn, but this was the when Friday nights was the place to go for Channel 4, if you know what I mean. It went like they'd show Friends at 9 o'clock on a Friday, and then it would be normally a British based thing. Mm. And I think Captain Butler might have been one of those in that it got shown then, but they must have made it very quickly and very cheap, obviously very cheaply from what we see.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got it actually playing in the background now with no sound on. And it's like you say, it's like watching like Bottom Live is the nearest.
Yes.
Where they're on the island, where there's like, we've got the set's not going anywhere, and we are not going off the set.
So critically, the big difference between Captain Butler and Bottom Live is that Bottom Live was funny and I actually laughed.
Yeah, I joked to you that I was having a laugh riot watching Captain Butler when I was watching the whole series. I don't believe I laughed out loud once.
No, me neither.
I think there was a couple of lines where I just went, but that was it.
And I mean, I was under the assumption it was a gritty drama. That's how much I laughed.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. Gritty.
Gritty.
It's just 1997. The fact that if this had been made in like 1967, okay. But 1997, I was at fucking university that year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jesus wept.
I mean, this is the same year that I'm Alan Partridge debuted in 97. I think Brass Eye also. I think we're a year or so off Father Ted, off Space, off kind of other big Channel 4 sitcoms. Black Books, I think, was as well.
But you look at those shows that you've suggested, they certainly didn't look as shite as this did.
Yeah, I mean, just quickly going to the things Matt was saying there of other stuff that came out. This is a year after something else that I think we're going to eventually be covering on the podcast, which is Asylum, which is the Edgar Wright directed Simon Pegg, Jessica Stevenson sitcom, which was on Paramount. And if anybody ever watched the Paramount channel back in the day, they had no money. But I think and it's got Norman Lovett in it. And we're going to see when we watch that, I think that they took the fact they had no money and made something that looked really quite good with one set. Whereas this did appear to have some money, like at least it had a Channel 4 studio.
But it looked like a panto, Carl.
Oh, it did, yeah.
Even the costumes, it looked like a panto.
Yeah. It, to me, felt like that there was... I feel that this was very rushed in pre-production. It could have been better. Not in in the way we all look at it and go, oh, it could have been better. But you get the feeling like if they'd thought about it a bit more, it could have actually been better.
Yeah. So, Carl, I want to ask you,
Better
or worse than Red Dwarf USA?
Better than Red Dwarf USA.
I would say significantly worse than Red Dwarf USA.
Oh, okay.
Have you watched Red Dwarf USA, Matt?
No, I think I have. I think I must have watched it on YouTube ages ago. And, yeah, I think the Red Dwarf USA, I think, it's got the characters in it. I mean, as much as the actors and the writing there, the premise and the characters are trying. So I think at least the structure and the base writing of the premise is there. Whereas here, it feels as if someone's lost the latest draft and the last draft they found was the first draft and they filmed that. Whereas I think at least with the Red Dwarf USA pilot, you had a lot of base work done on the premise already. So, and as much as it might have been cringy, whether it's miscasting of people, there is still some semblance of competency in the US pilot.
Yeah.
Whereas here, it's like, yeah, this needs to go back in the oven.
I mean, one of the things that I actually is like a positive point for me is there's a couple of performances in it that I actually enjoy. Not necessarily in terms of they're super funny, but that I actually enjoy the performance, like they've turned up to work.
Yeah. Well, we're going to go into each episode like a 5-minute chat on each one separately. Generally about the series, though, the writing team was Rob Sprackling and Johnny Smith, who, well, this was early work of theirs. They subsequently wrote all the Mike Bassett stuff and all the Romeo and Juliet stuff.
Let's not forget Grandpa in My Pocket that they wrote.
Right, well, I've never watched that, whereas I have watched one Mike Bassett film.
Spin-off podcast.
No. I didn't think much of Mike Bassett, but I know, Matt, as a football fan, you really like Mike Bassett. Was it a surprise that this was written by the same people?
Yeah. Okay, I'm not much of a football fan, as you might suggest I am. I only pretty much tune in for the international tournaments every 2 years, and then I tune off because I can't be arsed with club football.
To be fair, you do come from Birmingham, and their team is terrible.
There's several of them. I'm actually from Warsaw, so make that if you will. But no, the Mike Bassett film, it was a surprise that this came from them, because I think the Mike Bassett film was a lot stronger than I thought it was. I think that's one of those where you go in with low expectations and then you're quite surprised that it could be a lot smarter than it is, but it's still got quite a very biting satire of kind of the meat of media and the press and the reaction and the public pressure that public figures have. It's got something a lot in common with the Spice World movie in terms of that it almost can be a satire on the media and the paparazzi, but just misses out on that extra special thing. So I never thought I was going to bring up Spice World on this, but
it's fascinating, isn't it, that there's none of that sophistication or subtlety in Captain Butler whatsoever.
I can't remember which the two of you just said it, but it feels like it's slightly rushed.
Yeah.
Have any of their writings been something that you've enjoyed, Carl?
I'm not a fan. I can't remember the Mike Bassett films. The only thing I noticed on there where I went, oh, when I looked up what that is, that they wrote for Mike and Angelo, the kids' show, which I watched a lot as a child.
I enjoyed Mike and Angela.
Yeah, I never remember that being like super bad. Obviously, it was kids TV, and we're not talking intricate plots here that will confuse and bedazzle and amaze you. But I always remember that was pretty well done. But I almost think like the concept of this was come up with first, and then they got the writers. And for that, obviously, sometimes we all do things where it's like, this one's just a job. And I think for these writers, it might have been, it's just a job. It's not them creating characters that they love and think are going to be like, this is going to be the careers, as I think, Grant and Naylor did when they created Dwarf. It's like, well, these are our characters. We created them. I don't think that that's the case with these writers and Captain Butler. I think they're like, right, we want to do this. Let's get some writers in.
And then again, though, what could have happened? They could have had these ideas in their head for years and years, and then when they finally got to it, realised, crap, we've got 50p to spread over six episodes, and probably had to cut out a lot of kind of high concept things. So they probably got Craig Charles and thought, oh, yes, we can do Red Dwarf, but in the piracy and stuff. But then, and as much as we kind of, as Red Dwarf gets the mick taken out of it of looking cheap at times,
Series 1 of Red Dwarf is better quality than this.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but I think...
in every way.
Yeah, and it's quite... I think it's... considering how much, you can kind of... Red Dwarf can get mocked for being cheap. It's either they've either got a really good person to balance the books, or they get their sets off Del Boy down the... for cheap from Del Boy, from, like, some kind of Del Boy for props or whatever. But I think the money's... they spend the money well, or they distribute the money well in Red Dwarf, whereas they've either not got that ability for Captain Butler, or they just didn't have the same amount of money, because the first episode alone, they've got two different ships, and it's the same set, just with a Spanish flag draped in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Whereas I think at least with Red Dwarf, they somehow managed to do a better job at masking other ships But then again, I think by the time we got to series two, they was able to kind of build temporary sets. So like when you got so when you got the number five, the number five looks visibly different in terms of architecture and structure to Red Dwarf. But they just, I don't think they had the money. But if they ever got a second series, if they ever got, justifiably hadn't, but perhaps second series might have given them a bit more money to kind of perhaps do the stories and that they wanted to do.
It looks like this, because I was looking here at some of the crew that are on it, and one of the people who's like script and continuity, oddly, this is the last thing he did under the scripts and continuity, and the director as well, they all came from Desmond's, the Channel 4 sitcom, which won a lot of awards.
Desmond's was much better quality than this.
Yeah.
I never watched that.
And Surgical Spirit, I don't know if you remember that one.
No.
No.
I do. It's still good to this day. That was a really good one. But a lot of, looking at this, a lot of the crew, and I was looking at the production design to see if I could see who the set designer was. But the production designer seemed to be coming from a few other things as well. Like he did, again, he did Surgical Spirit and he did Gladiators. So maybe he's more used to doing something that's set for a live setting than for an actual studio setting.
Yeah, that does seem completely incongruous. Yeah. Sitcoms, then Gladiators. It doesn't feel like there's very much transferable skills, really.
Yeah.
And I think before we move to the episode itself, I just want to point out that if anything dates this more than anything, it's the role Sanjeev Bhaskar plays in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, he's wasted, but it's also borderline offensive.
Yeah, it's also a year before Goodness Gracious Me comes out.
Oh, is it? Okay, I hadn't got that timeline in my head.
So
he was completely unknown at this point then, really?
Yeah, because I was watching this going like, because I was surprised, because part of me is there going like, I'm really surprised that Sanjeev Bhaskar would have said yes to this, and then realising that it was probably one of the only kind of mainstream Channel 4 comedies that had an Asian role for him to play. So he took it. But so it was just before Goodness Gracious Me. Although I just want to double check that I think, did the radio show of Goodness Gracious Me start before this?
Yeah, I think it did.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking here. Again, Sanjeev Bhaskar's, I think it is, like I say, it was one of his very first, I think he's got two roles before this on television. And then after this, it's where he starts picking stuff up.
Yeah.
And I mean, this could pretty much probably be a bit of an inspiration for Goodness Gracious Me, and that they do parody a lot of, you know, like people asking them to do quote unquote the voice and things like that. Because in this, because I've been, as we record this, it's a couple of days after Christmas. And during Christmas, I have been binge-watching Midsummer Murders, as I am prone to do. And in it, Sanjeev Bhaskar turns up. And a lot of people know this, who've seen him in anything. He has got an absolutely gorgeous voice. It's, you know, it's rich. Especially in this episode, it's very rich, deep, pronounced voice. And then for him to have that voice, and then to see him doing this where he's, I think I said it to Mark once age ago, where he's kind of a-pooing it,
yeah,
for lack of a better term, is really sad.
Yeah,
because I think it's a year later he does the, it's a sitcom that's not known very well, but he's in one called Small Potatoes with Tommy Tin and Omid Jalili. And as far as I'm aware, he's using his normal voice in that. And it's like literally one year later or a year or two later, he's in a show where he can just be himself.
I mean, I'd argue these days in 2022 that Sanjeev Bhaskar is a bigger star than Craig Charles.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say so. He's, you know, he turns up in stuff like, I mean, he was in, what's the movie where you forget the Beatles?
Yesterday.
Yeah, he's in that. He turns up in a lot of stuff. You know, he might turn up in, you know, as like a doctor or something like that, but he's in lots of stuff. He's in Thomas the Tank Engine. You know, so he's in things that are all over the world. And I'd say definitely he's doing stuff more than Craig Charles is.
He's in The Sandman as well.
Is he?
Yeah, he's coming up in the I don't know what channels it's coming on, but the developing the adaptation of Neil Gaiman's The Sandman, he's in that.
Yeah.
Can't wait for that. That looks fantastic.
Yeah, I think I have absolutely no idea anything to do with The Sandman. So he's playing Kane, which I don't know if that's a big role or not. So
yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, but I from what I understand, he's in that series Unforgiven, which has been on. That's been apparently a really quite big hit on ITV. But I don't tend to watch ITV live, so I've not really watched it, but I've heard that it's very, very good.
Unforgotten,
sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think he's great because he was in, if you've never watched The Kumars at 42, it's brilliant. It's like Mrs. Merton, where it's a spoof kind of chat show, but Saint Pascal plays the straight man in terms of he's a chat show host whose family basically built a chat show set with an audience in their house. And then he has all these celebrities come in, but then they've got like these actors playing his family, and they kind of improvise interruptions during the chat show stuff, and it's genuinely really, really funny. And if anyone here has never watched Goodness Gracious Me, I cannot recommend that enough.
Yeah,
it's one of the best British sketch shows of all time.
I still quote that show at my dad because he is the stereotype of the British man who won't eat spicy food. Every time he orders from a restaurant, I say, "You've had the blandest thing on the menu." Every single time I eat out with that old gimmer. And I will never stop quoting that at him.
I think that win like the best British sketch of all time at one point.
Probably.
It's been voted the best Goodness Gracious Me sketch. But for anyone who's not unaware, this is just a sketch where there's a night out and there's like a few young Asian adults that go to a restaurant, but they go for an English, and then they ask for like, "Oh, we'll have like 74 plates of that fancy crap bread and butter, and all this. I'll have fish and chips. I'll have the blandest thing on the menu and stuff." And it's a spoof of kind of the culture, particularly in the 90s, of like going out for an Indian, and it's a lot cleverer than I'm making out, but
I don't think it's as important these days to kind of white people going to an Indian restaurant, but there was a competitiveness to eat the spiciest curry when I was young, that, you know, if you had the vindaloo, you were a badass. Whereas I don't think we really do that anymore.
Is this the origin story about how you lost your hair, Mark?
No, but it's why I like spicy food, because I competed with my friends over what was the spiciest thing we could eat. What a fucking stupid thing to do. Buy the thing that you like the taste of the most, you stupid, stupid white people.
Yeah, I will defend my korma.
I like a korma.
Yeah. In his performance in this show, I did notice there's a couple of things which I felt were nucleuses to characters that wound up in Goodness Gracious Me.
Potentially, yeah.
Because there's a bit where he keeps dropping in when he's talking.
Yeah,
he does.
I noticed that.
I reckon that's something he was working on, and that's what turned into the, I can't remember what the character's name was, but I always refer to him as the Kiss My Chuddies guy.
Yeah.
The two hip-hop kids.
Yes.
And they say in it and all that a lot. And yeah, you can kind of see like Sanjeev Bhaskar's probably not putting his all into this. But away from here, he's probably working on Goodness Gracious Me.
Yeah.
He's mentally brainstorming as he's acting.
Brilliant. So I want to talk about the theme tune. In what world did the Sex Pistols go, "Oh, yes, you can have our song for this shite"?
I get the feeling that they were a mate of somebody. Or, I mean, was this 96? This was when they did the comeback, wasn't it? 96, 97, they did the first sort of reunion shows.
But this is not punk. This is not punk. This is just shit.
It is. And part of me was wondering the fact that, because the song's Frigging in the Rigging, isn't it? And
yes.
The fact that they're singing Rigging in the Rigging over the top makes me wonder, does it create some legal loophole that they can use it because they're singing something else over the top that's not the same.
I mean, you got an idea of just how sophisticated this show isn't from the fart gag in the theme tune and the catchphrase at the end of the theme tune that was across the whole show of, oh, bollocks.
Yeah.
See, now, I couldn't remember if I ever watched this before, but then as soon as the title sequence came up and that was kind of cherubs started blowing and farting, I was like, oh, I remembered that visual. So yeah. I must have watched this when it first came out because I remember that bit.
Yeah, I had a similar thing. I remembered that, and I remembered the promo image of Craig Charles standing in the middle with everybody pointing a cutlass at him. But that one really stuck out in my head.
So I didn't remember any of this, and I feel that if I had, I'd have probably sat out of this episode.
Saying that, because he was mentioning about the kind of characters and like how, particularly with Craig Charles and Chris Barry, how they're approaching this. I still don't get an idea of the general comedic premise around Captain Butler. Now, bringing back Gordon Britis, he's kind of quite complex in his kind of premise in that he's a very by the book. He's very kind of by the book and wants everything to happen, but he's also kind of also wants everyone to know that he's by the book and stuff, and it clashes with the laid back attitude of all his staff. Now, I can't figure out whether Captain Butler's actually supposed to be, he wants to be a pirate or not. I can't figure out what the main comedic premise of this show is.
I always had it down, and I thought this again when I sat down to watch it for this one, is that he's a pirate that wants to be a pirate without doing any of the pirate, if you get what I mean. Like, it's weird because it does change over the course of the series in that he starts doing a bit more piratey stuff, but I always had it in essentially that he's a bit of a coward or a lot of a coward, but somehow he's wound up as captain. In the first episode, he basically caused a mutiny because he was pissed, wasn't it? Or he told an admiral where to go, is what's kind of explained in the first series.
I mean, he's clearly supposed to be inept. It's whether or not he thinks he's not inept isn't made clear.
Yeah.
It's whether or not he's happy being inept and wants to be essentially a pirate bum.
Yeah.
That sounds quite similar to Red Dwarf. None of this is made clear. And because of that, I think the character actually suffers.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like there's parts of Captain Mannering in terms of some kind of... But then Captain Mannering, I think, is inept. But he's got a level of self-importance that carries him on.
Yes.
Whereas there's no real... I think there's never a proactive role for Captain Butler. Whereas with Derek Trotter, Victor Meldrew, Captain Mannering, Gordon Britis, Basil Fawlty, there's always a kind of proactive drive that makes them do the things they do over other people. So, whereas Captain Butler, he seems to lack that kind of proactive drive, or misguided proactive drive, in terms of comparisons to other central characters in comedies.
I'm going to put on my Poncy character backstory hat for a moment in what I think is the case here.
Okay.
Because it's made clear that he was in the Navy.
Yeah.
And then he had the incident which got him kicked out of the Navy, and then he's become a captain of a pirate ship with this ragtag group. I think there is a bit somewhere, this could just be me, but I think there's a bit somewhere of a person who's completely lost his confidence in himself. Because he does talk about how he's done things in the past and it's worked. Like when he fooled everybody into believing he was a Spanish admiral, or when he's done this or when he's done that. But now he can't do it. It's almost like when he got kicked out of the Navy, he just lost everything in himself, and now he's a pirate and he wants to get out of it as fast as he can.
But the pathos isn't there, Carl. You have a character like Rimmer in Red Dwarf, perfect example. Part of the comedy is that he has lost his confidence and that he is not as impressive as he thinks he is or tries to be. And there's an ambiguity of Arnold Rimmer. There's nothing like that here. And by the end of series one of Red Dwarf, Arnold Rimmer was a very well-established, fleshed-out character, and there'd been a lot more laughs than this.
I also think that Captain Butler should... I mean, I mentioned those characters beforehand, but there's another kind of main character, like Renee from Hello, Hello, or Blackadder. Blackadder Series 2 onwards, where the character is competent, and if the circumstances were different, would be genuinely successful, but is surrounded in a kind of... The character could potentially do good things and be successful, but there's one major thing that's stopping them from doing it, and that's kind of Blackadder. That's Renee from Hello, Hello. That's just surrounded by circumstances that stop them from thriving. I think that if it was slightly tweaked, Captain Butler could probably end up being similar to Blackadder, yeah, in that he's competent, but perhaps doesn't want... But then he's surrounded by a crap ship, a crap crew. So... Yeah, so he kind of wants to be, so like, he could probably be a pirate, but not be as dubiously moral, I think. Because I think there's always like levels of piracy where you've got pretty much bloodthirsty, kill everyone, rape everyone, you know, pillage everyone. Pretty much your darkest of your dark piracy. And then you've got your kind of, we'll just steal to survive type thing. And I think the balance could have been, it probably should have been him being that, surrounded by people who want to be the really lowest of the low, but are too shit to be that thing. For example, Bosun is the older kind of, the joke being that he pretty much, whenever he suggests the lowest of the low, yeah, murder and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, and I think, yeah, and then you've got, I think, Roger, who's the kind of, who wants to be that, but can't be. But I don't think they've got the level of Butler right to be able to go against them.
No. I mean, if it went to a second series and given a bit more time for them to write the scripts, like we said before, it could have worked. It could have worked.
So for me, from the very, very beginning of this show, you saw the set, you saw the costumes. And if it hadn't been for the fact that the theme tune had started with, oh, bollocks, I would have thought this was a kids' program. I would go as far as saying that the costumes look like they went and got them from fucking Smithies.
I mean, it is shot and designed by people who primarily came and went back to a children's show environment.
And you can tell that. It's bad.
All right.
And also, right, the laughter track felt a little bit over the top for the amount of funny there wasn't.
Yeah. Yeah,
but that being said, right, the episodes of Red Dwarf where they don't have any laughter track at all did feel incongruous. So I don't know where the happy medium on this would actually land. Because when we get to Series 7 of Red Dwarf, I'm going to heavily criticise the lack of laughter track, because it does feel uncomfortable laughing to a sitcom when there isn't a laughter track behind it. So I don't really know whether I've got a valid point there, thinking about it.
I mean, with this, I think... it's overlit. I think if it wasn't lit so brightly, the sets wouldn't look as plasticky as they do. There's a lot you can cover up with lights.
I think one of the issues, I think, as well, particularly with the production side, is that because the ship looks like it's scaled down from what it actually would have been like. I mean, I'm pretty sure my house is bigger than that ship, and my house is tiny. Yeah. It's a tiny two-bedroom place. And I think to compensate that, they get really close with the camera angles.
Yeah.
They get really close with the camera angles, so you don't really get a sense of scale of the ship. I mean, like, it feels like you could walk from Captain Butler's quarters, and in four steps, you're in where the rest of the crew sleeps on the other side of the ship. How five people can sleep on that, I have no idea. But
yeah. I mean, I'm looking at it now, and it's the episode with the mermaid, and I'm looking at the ground, and it looks like there's just enough sand to cover the floor, but not enough that you would call like any form of beach.
Yeah. So we'll do it very quickly, episode by episode. Series 1, episode 1 was Death is Just Another Word, and like I say, it really felt like this should be for kids, but some of the gags, there were knob gags, there was laughs because people swore, and then suddenly there were references to slavery. And I'm like, what the fuck are you actually pitching here? Is it knob gags and lol, he said fuck? Or is it actually supposed to be saying something?
It's. I don't think it's meant to be saying anything, no. I mean, this is going back to... It's my kind of favourite bit of it is the performance by Roger Griffith, who's Cliff.
Hmm.
You know, you get the feeling that in part of his mind somewhere, he's in Armistad. he's not on a very cheap... Because he's... Again, we were talking about how you could stand characters and actors played together and if they're different people or not. He, for me, he's probably best well-known as being Everton in Chef, the Lenny yes. Henry sitcom. And in that, he's a very timid, sweet, like, innocent person. And you stand that next to this character that he's playing here, Cliff, and one, Cliff looks way more physically intimidating. He looks about 6'5".
Mm.
And he's, you know, he's playing it like, you know, he's it's almost like he's the only one who's turned up to act.
Yeah, that's probably fair, actually.
And so when he's doing the things about, you know, my, you know, slaves and they were raped and pillaged and I escaped and this, that and the other, it comes across to me that it's like, yeah, maybe in the script it's not meant to be done that seriously, but he's turned around and gone, you know what, if I'm doing it, I'm doing it properly.
Well, to be fair, you give a black person some lines about slavery, how else would, you know, they're not going to want to take the piss, are they?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it may seem a bit weird. It is a bit of a tonal shift, but, you know, credit to him, he's not going to make light of it. And, yeah, it does cause, you know, if anything, just for the fact it causes the tone to go like a record scratch, maybe it should have been taken out or redone.
But then later on in the episode, after... You know, they've had maybe sort of kind of had something to say about slavery. Craig Charles does a bad accent that's borderline racist where he mocks Spanish people. And it's like, come on, get your tone.
Yeah, there's the only bit in that where I actually kind of went, huh, which is the I'm bursting for a piss. But that wasn't because of the... I think just because the lisp thing was... There's moments in this where Craig Charles is corpsing. And it's the same as the Smegups thing where you just go, oh, Craig Charles has lost it and he's desperately trying to hold on. And that was a moment for me where I was like, Craig Charles is laughing at here because it's gone weird. But yeah, it's very strange because I think the actors who are playing opposite him are, well, not Shend, he's not, but are Spanish. So it's quite weird. He spits on a child as well.
It wasn't a good start, let's put it that way. Episode 2 was Kiss Me Harder, and the first thing in my notes was, I'm surprised that the parrot's real.
Yes.
That's where the money went.
Yeah, maybe that is where the money went. They had to rent a parrot.
This one for me is, I don't think it played up too much the fact that, the fact that they were saying like, oh, Nelson's this, that, and the other, he's 6'4", he's so handsome, he's buff, and blah-de-blah, and it turns out to be Robert Llewellyn. Who, while an attractive man, is not what they're saying. But that was the other thing, is Robert Llewellyn really needed to do more acting stuff because he blatantly embraces it when he does something like this.
Yeah.
He's enjoying himself. This and the episode of Bottom he's in.
I think for me, Robert Llewellyn was the highlight of the entire 6-episode run.
Yeah.
It got to that bit of like, where he's like, oh, I went to wherever the hell it was, and that's when I got where I graduated from the academy and blah de blah de blah. And that felt like it went on for so long.
Yeah.
He was like, come on, just catch him out, you know, just, or make it go somewhere. And it just doesn't.
Yeah, the padding out jokes. Yeah, there's something similar in the next episode where, as an example of that kind of thing, sorry to jump the gun a second, but the. He asks Cliff for advice, and he goes, one, do this. Oh, is it a rose when you're the name is still a whatever? And quoting all, and doing like Mad Libs and stuff. And then if they ended it there, it would actually have been a decent joke, but then they keep referring back to it. And I think that's what happens here, where they just and it kind of drags out the joke. And the punchline hits, and then the writing doesn't realise that, okay, you've hit the joke, don't capitalise it, and move on. And that happens quite a few times.
The only bit about that bit I quite like is it is Craig Charles's performance, where Cliff keeps giving him things to say, which everyone's like, oh my God, that is terrible. But the fact he hugs him at the end, I actually quite thought was funny. He's actually touched that Cliff's got this inside of him. Mm-hmm. And then it didn't need the reveal of him going, that's really crap. I thought it'd be funnier if he was like, this is genius. Yeah, but that's just me.
So one observation I made was that Nelson's stupidity, entitlement and cruelty is actually almost vaguely intelligent satire. Almost.
Sometimes some of the shows like this can just trip into it without really realising.
Yeah.
It's the mannering thing where it's incompetent somehow breeds promotion or something like that.
Yeah,
exactly that. And on the flip side of that, a little bit more racism, some stereotypical outfits for French people, another precarious accent. Oh, and two lovely gay jokes about gay people being pervy. And lol, Nelson's gay. Ugh.
What was the pervy gay joke?
It was suggestive that because a character was gay that he was pervy.
Oh, okay.
It was low key, but it was still a kind of raised eyebrow. That wasn't funny. Who was that for? Why did you bother? Literally dull as fuck. And yeah, it was all basically building up so that Craig Charles could grab Robert Llewellyn's dick, lol. So this had the best character in it, but it was still fucking wretched, this episode. Did you find the eye patch and wrist joke funny?
No, I kind of just went, oh, okay. I'd forgotten about the eye patch, to be honest, and the wrist thing. I actually, for a moment, I won't lie, I was drinking during this. I actually, for one moment, when he put the wrist in the jacket, it was like, someone's going to shoot him because they think he's Napoleon.
Yeah, I thought that as well, yeah. But then again, I've forgotten about that, but I was watching this at 1.5 speed. So.
Yeah.
Did you really watch this at 1.5 speed?
Hey, I managed to watch the whole series in the same time it took the two of you to watch 5 episodes. So, win for me.
Yeah, maybe I should have done that. Does it not, like, make them sound really squeaky when you do that?
Yeah,
No. The pitch was fine. It's just really, really fast.
I mean, maybe I should have done that. I've never listened to anything on extra fast speed or anything like that. I always listen to it at normal. I realise I'm a bit vanilla.
I listen to podcasts at 1.4 speed, so yeah.
I know Colin listens to them at like 2x speed, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Gotta get him in.
Do you not just, right, so if you listen to a podcast with me on at 2x speed, when you meet me, I must sound like this. When you meet me in reality.
I'm Mark.
I'm glad you brought that. Mark, I'm glad you brought that up first because I wasn't going to say anything.
I mean, Kurt's voice is quite deep anyway, but at like 1.5 speed it or just like slowed down, Kurt must be like Barry White.
Right, we're moving on to episode 3, Desert Island Dick. LOL, dick, lol, penis. Oh, kill me.
I do want to raise a point here. As much as you have just gone, oh, dick, penis, well, you've made some really bad knob gags in your day.
Yes. I haven't been paid to make those knob gags, and my knob gags haven't made it to television.
But then again, though, you can have very decent knob gags.
And these weren't even funny knob gags.
Yeah. You can't be a good knob gag.
And I do feel like this entire series felt like it should have been made in the 70s. The quality was 20 years older than what we got for 1997, I think.
Yeah.
Again, let me reference Red Dwarf 7 was released the same fucking year as this tat.
I think as well, this episode as well raises, again, kind of weird questions in terms of the tone of the series. Because this is the first one that has magic in it. Because it changes into a half man, half fish. as the punchline for the joke. So he like becomes like a merman, but he actually does change. It's not a dream sequence. And it's the only time there's actually kind of magical realism. Well, magical realism. What am I talking about, Matt? I don't know what the exact terminology is, but they add fantastical elements to it in terms for a punchline. So we actually have mermaids here, and it's, I don't know, it just feels like the series Bible hasn't been finished. Say, oh, this series has mythical creatures in it. So we can kind of tap into kind of that aspect, the fantastical aspect of it. So like it, by the time this shows up, there are mermaids in it. There's magical spells that didn't make sense.
I thought that the half man, half fish almost looked okay.
I mean, it was it's the stereotypical outfit for a half man, half fish that every sitcom has. Do you know what I mean? If they ever do anything like that. I mean, the Red Dwarf one in series 2 looked a bit better.
It really did. And again, that was 8 years before.
I think, I mean, partly I was wondering about this because this is the year after Craig Charles' rape charge.
Right, okay.
And it does make me wonder if him, I mean, he was cleared, and it does make me wonder if that just financially wiped him out. And they've just gone, we've got something for you, Craig. We can get, and he's just gone, get me on telly as fast as you can. And this is
right,
what's happened.
Okay.
Because Red Dwarf at the time is still a year or so away. Part of me wonders if this is him going like, this is like what Nicolas Cage does now, where it's just like, give me a DVD movie and I'll go do
fair.
It. Yeah, it's.
Fair.
I think this is what he's doing, because we'll talk about this. Like Cyberzone was, he's always done bits on the side that have been fairly cheap. And another thing that he did around this time is the show The Funky Bunker. Do you remember that?
Oh, Christ, is that another special I'm not going to want to do?
I found an episode of it, Mark.
Of course you have.
But it's his live like talk show variety show that went out at like 11:30 at night from like a nightclub in London, and it's just crash TV. But he did a few different ones at the time. 97, Craig Charles is quite busy, and 96, 97 before Red Dwarf comes back. And you kind of get the feeling it's because he needed to work.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah.
That does make a lot of sense, actually. So this episode, right, had the one time I nearly laughed. I smiled once during the 6-episode run. And that was the, and my mother is a turbot joke. Almost. I almost laughed. But then they reused it twice subsequently, and I didn't even raise a smile.
I mean, turbot's a great word.
It is.
The thing I noticed in this, because in this we meet the father of Tracy, who's... I remember this going out the first time when I was like 15, and I thought the what's your name and she, the whole mythical explanation behind the fact her name's Tracy, I thought was actually quite funny at the time. Doesn't hold up much now, but
no.
The actor who plays the father, who does the very weird ceremony, I looked him up because I was like, I wonder if this is just someone they've dragged in, or is this like a respected actor that they've got to just do this very weird, very stereotypical thing. And a fun fact about him is he's in the 1989 original Batman.
Good grief.
And he's in Batman Begins. And he's probably one of the only actors you could say that they've done that.
Good grief.
Yes, you say that about Batman Begins as well. Roger Griffiths had a very small role in it.
He does, yeah. He's a copper in it, isn't he?
Yeah.
Are we going to get to the main thing about this episode, which is Craig Charles's bum?
I mean, I just wrote down in my notes, Craig Charles's arse, ...
Yeah.
Damn!
It's a good arse, isn't it?
It is a pleasant bottom.
Yeah.
I did enjoy that.
How much do you think he went and like did squats in the week leading up to it? Like, if my arse is going to be on telly?
I don't know. But he's definitely brought pleasure to the world because he has such a beautiful ass.
Yeah, not a blemish on it, is there?
No.
I'm looking at it now. I've actually paused the episode on Craig Charles's back. And yeah, it takes a lack of pretension as an actor to show your ass on national television, basically shagging the ground.
Yeah.
Because he's going for it.
He is.
Yeah. You know, it's... I remember as a kid wondering what he was actually doing. But yeah, it's one of the moments in it where it's like... It's almost like what this could have been. In that it's got this weird sort of heightened reality of it cuts over to Tracy and she's reading a magazine. You know, it's if it had gone a bit more surreal in that sort of sense, I think if it came back for a series two and it just went really, like, odd in terms of what you could find at sea, I think it'd be... I've got it on 1.5 speed as well. Craig Charles is really shagging the ground.
I mean, maybe.
Yeah, it's... I think stuff like that might work better. But yeah, it would have needed more money and people who weren't just filming it like a kids' TV show.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is one bit which... for me is when Matt was talking about how he should have been a bit more like Blackadder, is the where Roger gets him to hold the two fish to his ears and sing "I'm a Little Teapot," and he sort of goes, "How do you feel?" It's like, "Oh yeah, I feel different." "Oh, how?" "I feel a bit like a bit of a wanker." I thought that was more how the character should be and a bit more acerbic, because during the series he's an all right bloke. You know, he's not a dick to anybody outright, and he's not, you know, he likes his crew, and you know, he looks out for them and stuff like that. But if he was a bit more of a prick, I think it could have been a more interesting series.
Yeah, that's probably true. Moving on to episode 4, The Tale of the Ancient Mariner, and it was my hope that it would be some kind of sophisticated take on The Rime of the Ancient Mariner by Samuel Taylor Coleridge. I have an English degree, I studied that for quite length, and I really enjoyed that poem, and it was shit.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, this was
This might be the worst episode of the lot.
Is this the one with the albatross?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it is like inspired by The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, but it's hardly sophisticated, is it?
Oh yeah, I mean, there's a few things in this that really... One, it zooms into the sun to do a transition, and zooms out, and it's blatantly a lamp on the back wall. Two, Bosun takes his wig off, and the character instantly looks a million times better.
Yeah,
and it's like, why did you wear the wig in the first place? And it's, again, it does have the one gag in it that I actually think is kind of funny, which is the peeing over the side joke. And it's not funny in that, like, sort of knob gag, ha 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 ha, but it's the reaction of Bosun and Cliff when they both look at Captain Butler, then pat him on the shoulder. That is probably the only gag in it where kind of went, because just that look of, well, you're shafted.
Lol, I saw what you did there. You did a funnier joke than the entire series of Captain Butler.
Well, it's now time to announce that I'm bringing Captain Butler back, Mark.
I will kill you.
You're not going to be in it for me.
No. So the problem, particularly with this episode, was I didn't give two shits about the threat of all these characters' impending death. Because even 4 episodes in, I don't care about a single one of these characters. Let's once again compare it to Red Dwarf. By episode 4 of series 1, you understood all the characters, you understood their motivation, you had a deep, deep character of these 3 characters. Even the cat was much more kind of well-rounded, and you understood the character and you cared about him.
Mm.
By episode 4 of series 1 of Red Dwarf, compare that to the just... I didn't care. No. I kind of wanted them to die, and I didn't want there to be an episode 5 and 6.
The fact that a character, quote-unquote, dies and disappears in the first 5 minutes, and they don't seem to really give a shit, kind of reflects sort of what's going on. I kind of guessed what was happening from the off. I didn't really remember how it went, but when they were talking about there's no decent ghost stories... and then this happened. I was like, right, I think I know what's going on here. The only thing in this that I thought was actually quite admirable is Sanjeev Bhaskar's hair is fabulous.
Is that really your best thing?
His performance in this is kind of probably his shining moment of the show, because he goes insane. It's not great, but he does like take his hair down and it just shows he's got really nice hair. Because some of the, like I say, Bosun shouldn't have the wig on. Sanjeev Bhaskar's character shouldn't have the hair tied up. And they'd probably look a million times better from an aesthetic thing, if you get what I mean. And the scene where there's a scene where his character thinks that they're going to die and he's going a bit mental. And he starts stripping his clothes off and it cuts really awkwardly for the ad break. And you get the feeling that that was almost a joke on Sanjeev Bhaskar to keep taking his clothes off. And he went right the way down to like his underpants, but they didn't really use it.
Yeah. I mean, again, Sanjeev Bhaskar and Craig Charles were very good sports in this show. There was some quite undignified stuff to do and they did it with gusto.
Yeah. You know, if you compare it, there's like, you know, Craig Charles is if we were doing like a Red Dwarf comparison, like Craig Charles is Lister, basically, in this. I'd think that Sanjeev Bhaskar's character is like a more cowardly cat. If you get him in, he's the one who kind of, you know, maybe will immediately scream and this and that. These are very loose connections. Like, yeah. Roger the cabin boy is basically a Labrador puppy. Bosun is a more sadistic and psychotic Rimmer. And Cliff is probably the only kind of character that wouldn't fit the paradigm. But again, I'm looking at it now, and you know, Roger Griffith, who plays Cliff, he's acting, and everybody else just appears to be titting about a bit. You know, it's really interesting to watch with it, like, because I haven't got the sound on, so it's kind of interesting to watch just from the physical performances. And everyone's doing a lot of gurning, apart from, like, Roger Griffith.
Moving on to episode 5, Kidnapped, which obviously is a reference to the lesser-known pirate book by Robert Louis Stevenson that was kind of, like, linked to Treasure Island, but not really. And it starts with a wanking joke. And I like wanking jokes. I like knob gags. Why weren't these knob gags funny?
Dear Channel 4,
Channel 4.
This is on All 4, which is what made me laugh. It's like the amount of stuff that's good that's not on All 4, and this is on All 4.
They actually still publicised that they made this tat.
The funny thing about it is I watched it on All 4 on a computer to start with, and the resolution and aspect ratio was fine. And then I went over to the TV and used a TV app, and it was stretched. And I don't know why that is. I don't think it was my TV. But I don't get why it looks crap on a telly, but it looks fine on a computer.
No clue. And it's also on YouTube for free as well. No one cares about this program.
I actually thought this episode, with them being in the marina, visually looked better because you got the background of the marina.
Yes, definitely.
If they'd almost base the series as they're a group of pirates who never leave the marina, I'm just looking at it now, it looks a million times better. I'm guessing it's a matte painting, but it looks a million times better than the sea and sun. There's fog for a start. Like, obviously you can't do that at sea unless you really want a dark show, but if they did the whole series of them, they're a bunch of pirates who never leave the marina. That premise is instantly a million times better than what we've got.
Yeah, so like this pirate who just can't be asked to pirate.
Yeah, and then you've got room for more characters. You know, in this episode, they happen to go into piracy bits.
I think there's a valid point there, though, that you've got such a loose concept. Yay, let's do a pirate sitcom was pretty much all the concept was. And if it did have a bit more of a kind of focus and an understanding of what they wanted to do and who the characters were, it could have been watchable as opposed to torturous.
Yeah. I mean, it's the thing they always say about Red Dwarf, isn't it? That Red Dwarf isn't a space sitcom. It's a sitcom set in space.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is a pirate sitcom rather than a sitcom that happens to be about pirates, which is what it should be.
What a nice way of putting it.
I did think it was funny that the reveal, the Blackbeard reveal and the joke would then be plagiarised later in No way, I can't finish that sentence because Mark's on this podcast.
What?
I can't, spoilers.
Also, when Blackbeard does turn up in this episode, I didn't realise Colin took acting jobs before he moved on to podcasting roles.
That's naughty, that is. You're naughty. That's the funniest thing I've seen all day. Sorry, not sorry, Colin. I'll be honest, by episodes 5 and 6, I had very much lost the will to live. I didn't put many notes on this, but I did put Adil's breakfast sounds all right, actually.
I feel at 5 and 6, there's actually a bit of an upturn in the fact you've got the different sets. The plots seem to make a bit more sense.
Yeah.
And the characters are doing stuff that isn't, this is my accent. Like Adil's thing where he's like, oh, I can paint a picture of the girl and we'll pin it up. And then he reveals that he deals in abstract art and it's all going to be triangles. I actually thought that wasn't too bad of a gag. The fact he's on the look on his face as well as Sanjeev Baskin is really into that joke, probably because they might have started adding their own jokes in by this point.
That does make sense.
Yeah.
Actually.
Or at least they started to perhaps think of, crap, we need to give these characters character.
Yeah. Maybe they thought they were cancelled.
Is it this episode or was it this episode where... Yeah, it was this episode as well where they thought the girl dies and then it was Cliff that's going, no, she's dead, she's gone. And then like, and she kept going, oh, she's moving, just involuntary, blah, blah, blah. And like, basically the joke was that he knows all these kind of anachronistic medical drama tropes and dialogue that he was giving. And like, yeah, and he was saying all this line stuff. That I thought was quite funny because the series throws in its anachronisms. Is that the right word?
It's like the pirate was quoting things like E=MC². That wasn't funny at all. But with this, it's, you know, Cliff knows all the medical term, like basically either one of the writers or Roger Griffiths has been on Casualty or something like that. Yeah.
So if you've got if you had Roger Griffiths going for the very kind of being the serious actor in a comedy and perhaps made him the kind of dramatic gravitas as part of his joke that you'll always say things like that, that might have been probably been a better route to the character, because I can't. Because other than that, that's the only time I kind of latched onto what that character could have been. I can't think of any other time he had a character. Because I thought that was almost funny.
I mean, it's very easy. Almost. I think it's very easy to say this is the best episode of the series.
I think we'll get to the last one. But I'll reserve my comments for that.
The thing is, what there is a, looking at it now, it's just got to a bit. There is a joke in it that I thought was all right, which is Adil brings Butler his breakfast and he gives this long description of this beautiful blah-de-blah biryani, this, that, and he flips, he goes, in a bap. That appealed to my kind of silly nature a bit. It was like, yeah, just stick it in a bread roll.
I love putting stuff you shouldn't put in a bap. Yeah. So I'm with Adil on this one.
Onion bargee on a cob.
Yeah, the way we were talking about Adil's not exactly culturally sensitive. They do have a very open appreciation of Indian food in this, in that they're all more than happy to eat things like this. And it's, do you know what I mean? It's like, but yeah, the character itself is just.
I was half expecting them to start talking about vindaloos, and I was thinking, okay, if they start mentioning vindaloos, I'm going to jump out the window. That's too much of an in joke, but. I think kind of right in that it's visually a lot more interesting. There's a lot more kind of, there's an easier way to set up external forces. Yeah. It kind of capitalizes on pre-existing knowledge of Blackbeard and the historical accuracy. So it almost ventures in towards Blackadder in places.
Yeah.
Not almost. Really as good. Almost, yeah. Yeah, I think, again, another draft of the script perhaps would have tidied this up a bit more.
I think this is the way it would have gone if it had gone another series, because it's like you said, in this episode and the next one, we get more locations. We're not just on the ship. Maybe these episodes were written first and then it was like, oh, we're going into production early. So they ended up writing the ones where basically everybody's on the ship for the whole one. But
maybe
it's this. Whereas before I said everything's like super overlit in the first four episodes, in this there is grime. There is, it's not as brightly lit.
That said, Carl, because the amount of money that they apparently have, the ball's probably just gone out the stage lights and they couldn't afford to replace them.
Yeah. That'll be, you know, it's one of those happy accidents. Like, oh, the lights have gone. Actually, that doesn't look too bad, you know. Open the door and let natural light in, and we could be okay here. Yeah. You know.
But, however, yeah. What I will say about the costumes, there was a line where they described their over-the-top pirate costumes as third-rate pirate getup. It was no worse than their original fucking costumes. They just had false beards.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I think their normal costumes looked a bit more... Even I don't think they looked piratey, but they did look like they could have been from the time. Do you know what did look good, though, is the makeup of them getting from them all getting a kicking?
Yeah, Craig Charles' bust lip was actually pretty horrible to look at. I'll give you that.
It's the only bit where the character really goes aggressive. He says, right, we're going to give you a damn good kicking. And I was like, oh, right, they're actually going to get away with something. And then it turns out they get the shit kicked out of them by one bloke. But the makeup's great. I thought the gag was like, oh, yeah, he's a black belt third Dan. And then the episode just ends. Was rubbish. But that makeup, especially on Craig Charles, it's like, that's really nasty.
Yeah, fair. Moving on to the final episode, Jailhouse Croc. And, yeah, I think I'd switched off. I've just written, it all just feels like cliche and old recycled gags. Is this satire? And all the money was spent on the set. I've got nothing else. I think I was done at this point. Sorry, guys.
This, I think, I mean, I kind of tuned back in at this point. Still basking in the fact that episodes were 16 minutes long instead of 24. But but yeah, this is the one I think is perhaps the closest to what I think they could have got with the character of Captain Butler, because for a quote-unquote ensemble cast, this is probably the best one that attempts to explore the character of Butler and his relationship with his crew and stuff, because this is where he's almost Blackadder-esque, yeah, in terms of scheming and plotting, but then kind of genuinely cares for the kind of idiots that he's with. And it's this one as well. I thought, okay, the supporting four characters are the traditional idiotic character tropes, but it highlights how different kinds they are. So you've got kind of the gravitas of Cliff, thinking he's like, I don't know, smarter than he perhaps is. You got Bosun, who's the kind of stereotypical pirate cliche. You've got Roger, who's a cross between Pike and a footstool.
He is Pike, isn't he? I didn't think of that.
And yeah. Adil, who's the kind of like optimistic outsider, which I don't think they capitalize on. And then all kind of following someone who what they should be doing is following someone they think is genuinely smart and world wise and stuff, but actually perhaps isn't. But then just kind of wants to live his own life. And this is the closest I think the show gets to that, because...
That's fair.
But I think because Butler's plan of escaping kind of... Okay, it's sitcom level, but there are elements I could see some of the Blackadder family doing that.
Yeah.
The only difference being... Yeah. The difference being is that Blackadder would have fucked off. He would not have gone back for a... He wouldn't have gone back for the others.
Well, yeah. But I think that just emphasises how all over the place the whole thing has been, is that this did resemble Blackadder, whereas none of the previous episodes did.
No. I mean, it's finding its feet, isn't it? It's just a shame that it hit this bit. If all the episodes were like this, you kind of feel that it wouldn't be looked down upon as much as it has been. You probably look down on it as it'd be like, oh, it's kind of like a second-rate Blackadder that involves pirates. I am quite surprised that, because there's been so many attempts to bring back Blackadder over the years, and we've heard some of them in interviews and stuff, and they all sound terrible.
Sure.
But I'm surprised that none of those scripts have not been rejigged to make other sitcoms. I mean, if there was one somewhere, it's like Blackadder's a pirate, they could have easily rejigged that to make this. And it kind of feels a bit that way with these last couple of episodes in. They get off the boat. It's almost like the set builders weren't ready. In the same way when we talk about Red Dwarf Series 7, the models weren't ready for what we wanted to shoot. It's almost like the set builders weren't ready for when they wanted to start the series, so they had to rewrite the first four episodes to put them on the boat.
I mean, that could be fucking true as well, you know?
Yeah, well, that explains why the Spanish ship in the first episode is the same set with a Spanish flag draped over the middle. But yeah, there's a bit more interest in terms of this. There's a gag about porridge. I almost thought that it needed another draft, but the whole thing about, I can't remember what his name was, but their cellmate.
Marbles.
Yeah, and like how psychotic he was getting about breaking someone's quill, I thought potentially was like needed a bit of finesse and writing. But
actor is trying, isn't he? He's giving it some. It's just the material he's working with.
Yeah.
It's like in this episode, there's the guard, and I think the guard, he speaks, and then he almost Tourette's, like, screams at them. But I think he yells the same thing every time, and that could have been turned into something different with a second draft or a bit of a chat about what you wanted to do with it. And
I think the first four episodes probably needed two more drafts, whereas the second, the fifth and sixth perhaps needed one more.
Yeah.
It could easily, if it did get a second series, which I think the first four episodes doomed it, because putting these two on at the end, no one's going to watch them if the first four are absolutely wretched. If you could have the greatest finale of all time, but if what's leading up to it is shite, then no one's going to watch that last episode.
I think you're right, because I said at the start of this episode that I'd switched off because of the previous crap. But having listened to what you two have both said, there is an element of truth in what you're saying. And I didn't even spot it, because I think my brain had just gone, oh, fuck this.
Yeah, and I think in the end of the day, I'm going to compare it to, I'm not going to mention the British Empire, I'm going to compare it to a different thing now from another member of staff, another member of the Red Dwarf cast. But I think it's telling as well in terms of, if you compare this to Love It Goes to Town, Love It Goes to Town probably had like a quarter of the budget, even less than perhaps this had. But then I genuinely found that a lot more entertaining, because I think there's a lot more kind of care done to it and a lot more kind of deliberate. I mean, as much as it feels like Love It Goes to Town felt like it was improvised, I feel like everything was deliberate. And I feel like at least there could have been at least more than one attempt at half the stuff that was happening on this. Whereas this feels... Again, I didn't find much on the production side, but I got a feeling that perhaps the production aspect of Captain Butler kind of let it down, which meant that there was a lot less opportunity to kind of craft and put more care into what they was putting out. So when you compare this like six episode kind of pirate series to a one off, which is basically stand up, it's a bit of a shame that this didn't get any further. I think if looking at this, if it went to a second series and they reworked what they did or saw what was working and what wasn't and did a bit of a more major rehaul, it might have done a bit better. But then, I mean, Rob and Tony, and you have been watching, have said a few times that particularly with British sitcoms, it's never usually the first series that grabs people.
No. A good example of that's Men Behaving Badly.
True.
The first series with Harry Enfield, it's not bad, but you wouldn't go, oh, this is going to be the most watched sitcom of the next few years.
I say Only Fools and Horses took a while to get going.
Even going back to like the first Blackadder series, it was good, but it nearly killed the entire franchise dead.
Yeah, I mean, the Blackadder, the first series, I remember watching that, but I think I was a bit too young to catch it the first time, so I kind of grew up on repeats of... I think the third and I think the fourth. And then when I went to see the first one finally, I was like, it was completely weird. And I can only imagine what it was like watching it for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, even Red Dwarf, you know, Grant Naylor said don't rebroadcast series one for a reason. I mean, it wasn't the writing, it was just how it looked. You know, it's, and like, say, I'm the bit I'm looking at now is the hanging scene with, again, it's got a slightly surreal bit in Michael Fenton Stevens as the executioner slash quiz show host. I think they found then, they kind of found where it was going leading up to this last episode, because they're only on the boat in like the last bit. And another thing I noticed in the last few episodes, the boat moves. It's not the camera, the boat's moving.
Oh, so it's starting to rock on the sea.
The boat's rocking, but it doesn't do that in the first four episodes.
Fix the rocking machine.
Yeah, it's whether it's the crew just going, bugger it, it's the last two, shake the boat, or they've actually got a, you know, just a bunch of unpaid runners just like, just because there's a bit where they lean on the side and it's very apparent that the camera's fixed and the boat's rocking. It's, I think, yeah, it could have done better. The fact that the series finished with Craig Charles saying he was going for a wank is a sign that there was a lot of work to be done. But it could have been that if it was done, it could have worked.
But it didn't, did it?
No.
No, Mark, no.
So I've enjoyed having this conversation and getting it off my chest with you two. But to say that I enjoyed very much of that would be a lie. But I think anyone who's been brave enough to watch all of Captain Butler deserves to have a bit of a bitch about it. I kind of hope that this has been fun for people to listen to, because we really haven't been nice. I think this is the most scathing episode we've done, including Red Dwarf USA.
I think as much as it was painful to watch, I'm glad I watched it, because I've always got a very keen interest in one season wonders or one season failures, or just particularly TV failures in general, because I always find them fascinating, particularly US network TV, because I always find it quite interesting how they'll put so much money into stuff and then cull it after two or three episodes. Yeah, and I always find it quite interesting to see why something didn't work, and it's interesting to kind of shoot the shit, more or less, so to speak, about why this didn't work.
Yeah.
It's interesting. As I say, I was talking to a friend of mine before we got started, and we were watching like a compilation of intros of like films and TVs that got cancelled. And we were saying sort of how everything's so oversaturated with content now that a lot of the shows that we watched and we love probably wouldn't have made it. Like, Red Dwarf wouldn't have made it. I'm pretty safe in that opinion that would be the case. The first series of Blackadder, with the amount of money it cost, would have got cancelled either halfway through, same as like Cowboy Bebop just has, because it costs too much, or because it didn't draw in the ratings. You know, this is why it makes me sound old, but the 80s through to like the late 90s. Is probably why a lot of shows that have stuck in people's memory for a very, very long time stick in people's memory, because it wasn't a case of, if it doesn't work, we'll just scrap it and do something else.
Yeah.
It's, you know, a lot of these shows, like, I can imagine, like, if Game of Thrones was on the BBC after that first series, if it wasn't a hit ratings-wise, it wouldn't have come back. But then there's some stuff where, like I said, with American TV, you get things where it's like, there's one series I'm looking for something I'm researching at the moment, which is called She Spies. And it's three hard-kicking badasses.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, three series. You know, this was during a time where Americans were like, bugger it, throw money at it.
That's one with Natasha Henstridge and what's her name from USA, Ashley from USA High.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see, like, giving a show a bit of breathing room could cause it to become something better. And I think, especially the British shows, that's been the case. This sadly wasn't one of them, but you never know. It could have been Craig Charles's Britus.
But it wasn't. Before we go, Matt, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on the internet if you look for Pick a Disc. Pick a Disc, that's the podcast at our house where I speak to people about music, blah, 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 all that jazz. You can find also on all the socials under Pick a Disc on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter.
And where can people find you, Carl?
Well, you can find me by going over to allmylinks.com/Mr. Carl. I don't have any podcasts on at the moment apart from this one, which is my favourite one to do. But, you know, there's links to all my other stuff, you know, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram. My OnlyFans is up there if you want to contribute. And, yeah, that's where all my stuff is.
As for me, I've got some podcast projects in the... well, kind of in the planning stages, but the ones you can check out that are still current are Right in the Childhood, which is a podcast about kids' TV, nostalgia, and the difference between generational experiences of kids' telly. I also do a podcast about the Chucky franchise called Chucky Vision. If you're looking for Right in the Childhood, it's at RITCpod on Twitter. If you're looking for Chucky Vision, it's at Chucky Vision on Twitter. And all the podcasts we've mentioned, if you're listening to this podcast on a thing, just search for it on that thing. It will be there. So thank you so much for listening to another episode of Shipwrecked and Comatose. We will get back to Series 6, we promise, at some point. But until then, and until the inevitable next special...
oh, bollocks.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at wemadethispod.com or on Twitter at We Made This Pod.
Hello, everyone. This is Tony, Network Chief of We Made This. As you know, our podcast network brings together a brilliant assortment of talent who talk about all kinds of pop culture content, such as the episode you've just listened to. We're not going anywhere, but we'd love to keep the lights on for even longer if you're able to support our network on Patreon. For just £2 a month, you get your name in lights and the satisfaction of knowing you're helping us produce more great audio. And for £3 a month, you'll get your name in lights, but you'll also get access to an exclusive bi-monthly podcast from the We Made This talent pool on podcasting, pop culture, and, well, you tell us. We'll take your suggestions. For less than the price of a coffee per month, you can help keep We Made This going. Just head to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. That's patreon.com/WeMadeThis. And get the ball rolling.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Chucky Vision.
The next poll is a little bit more interesting. It was Survive or Die Again with the adult characters. And the characters were Logan, Bree, Michelle and Detective Evans. And the Chucky Vision listeners predicted that Detective Evans would survive the week before she died on the show.
I remember that, yeah. That we made that poll. Well, I was going to say premature. We've made that poll probably at the perfect time.
Yep, I think so. And they also predicted that the character that would die would be Michelle. And looking at the characters, Michelle is the only one of the four that actually survived.
With this month's issue.
I was looking up what the point of the band name was, because obviously Black Country being sort of like about a mile away from where I am right now.
Yeah.
Black Country New Road, they have said it's a metaphor for a good way out of a bad place. So, fuck you! Not going to endear themselves to many Midlanders with that. You know, Dudley Zoo and Wolverhampton Civic Hall are fucking ace.
Yep, both of those places. Well done, Colin.
Yeah.
Successfully defended yourself with two locations.
I have. All right, West Midland Safari Park, pretty cool as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Frame to frame.
This episode was our Christmas horror film episode.
yeah.
Now you mention Gremlins.
Well,
where was that a week ago?
Well, I mean, what can I say?
I mean, genuinely, this is...
You should have consulted the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, and you would have been able to see this situation happening before it did. So
this is episode 81 of the podcast, right? And I will flat out say to you now, this is the worst film I have watched for this podcast. It is worse than Sextet. It is worse than Cats. I just hated everything.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.